We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Right now it's 1:33. This is the AMETS Policy Committee. And we do have a forum. So item number 1B, audience participation. And we do have a William Mackey would like to speak to us.
CIC, been there for several years, and the staff has presented a fresh intersection chart, summary data, and a roadway section chart for 2 years, all right? The reason I'm talking is way back in the Problems of Democracy class in high school, my instructor said the purpose of the government make roads, which we do as a group, rather than everybody putting up an individual turnpike like they did back on George Washington days, and they charge you all your wagon truck. It became public land. So, I guess this is the group in charge of the roads. Look at table one, roadway section. You got 19,291 problems. When you take out everything that's 50 crashes and above, so that would be like 7 crashes at that intersection every couple years, it gets interesting. If you can eliminate 10% of the roadway section, there's 23 of them out of 124. You'd eliminate, or really reduce, 1,970 crashes. Now, I think that'd be good for the citizens, be good for EMTs and fire departments that don't have to respond so much, be good for those that commute, and be nice to the, insurance company. They'd probably like to see fewer crashes. Going to the high crash intersections, 23,660 incidents. Again, picking up on everything that's, say, 50 and above. That's 2,063 intersection crashes, 9% roughly. If we could reduce it 10% just on the high-ranking ones, that would be something I think this group should focus on. Not everybody saying, I'm going to go home and take care of my little intersection because I get 50 crashes or 30 crashes in a 2-year period. Okay, that's going to happen. You can obviate that a little bit. Our last CIC meeting, we had a police report that showed that the car pulled through because there were bushes at the intersection. Couldn't see the bicyclist. Well, even Cotter Falls has this rule. If it's a hedge 2 feet high, 20 feet back from the intersection, you're coming up on a vehicle, you've got clear line of sight to see to get through. So I'm asking the group, look at these high crash sections and intersections. That's where we should be putting our money. That's where we should be getting rid of these crashes. Or, what's the flip side of that? Facebook, welcome to Akron. Welcome to Summit County. Welcome to Portage County. We'll ensure that you enjoy your stay here if you're a student or a citizen. We'll ensure you have a crash at least once a year. We'll ensure your insurance company gets involved. You get to know your insurance agent. We'll ensure you know your EMTs well and your hospital staff well and your wrecking company well. I mean, that's where we're headed if we don't clean up these high-rate intersections. All right. My two bits. Thank you, gentlemen. Press on. And ladies.
Thank you. Thank you for the comments. All right, moving on. Item number two, the minutes from May 15, 2014. Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Do I have a second? Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item number three, staff reports. 3A, the financial Jason?
Thank you. If I could address your attention to Attachment 3A, the Financial Progress Report. It was in the folders at the door. Really, the big issue to highlight here is we're 2 months into the fiscal year. This takes us through August 31st. If you look at line 9 at the bottom of the report, we have expended 18% of the budget, so we're really right where we should be at this time of the year. All the work that the staff's been working on in the first 2 months of the fiscal year is going according to schedule, and we're within budget. So I would recommend approval at this time.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 3B, the technical report. Curtis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few things to talk about. First, as many of you know, as we've been sending out emails, is that we are having our MS annual meeting October 17th. As usual, it's kind of a morning and an early afternoon event. We've got about 2 weeks left to register. We are already up to about 167 registrants, so we're actually thinking this year we might eclipse 200, which is quite a feat for us. On the agenda, we've got Peter Kageyama, who wrote the book For Love of Cities, and also our Akron's own David Giffels, who'll be talking about a couple of his books and kind of growing up in the Akron area and some of the importance of place and how it interacts with transportation and how we can help improve the place. So I would encourage everyone, if you haven't already registered, to please do. We think it's going to be a great event. We're also going to have, at the end of the event, a Cabot Falls walking tour of some of the local areas right around there to allow people to see some of the work that they've done around the Watermark building and with the park. So it's going to be a great event, and like I said, I think we've got about 2 more weeks to sign up. Second, we have been doing some work on mid-block crossings, areas where we think there might be a need for crosswalks or some sort of signage mid-block. Different locations throughout our region. Nate Gruber from our staff has been working on that report. Within the next couple of days, we're going to be sending out that report to all of our members to please take a look at it, see if there are areas that you think we haven't added, that you think we'd like to see added, or areas that you don't think need it. That report will then eventually come to you guys for approval in December. So we're trying to get a lot of feedback now early so we can make any changes on that. Third, any of you who came to our Switching Gears conference this summer saw Jason Roberts from Better Block speak. The Knight Foundation helped us bring him into town, and now the Knight Foundation is going to help us actually do a Better Block project in Akron. It's going to be in the North Hill neighborhood near Temple Square, and it's looking like it'll be set up and scheduled this spring, so we're looking forward to that. We're kind of helping move it along. And that will more details will be coming as we kind of approach into the spring. Also, the trust fund from a federal perspective, we've got about till May, till the trust fund is then again expires. Also, though, in about 78 days, December 13th, the federal transportation appropriations, the yearly appropriations end. So programs like Tiger Grant and things like that will no longer be able to provide funds if that's not renewed. So again, we've kind of had some issues on the federal level. We had a short stopgap that's going to get us till May, but that's going to be an issue we expect to hear a lot about in the spring. And with that, I know Jason had written a letter, and we had talked as a policy committee about reaching out to our representation, writing about the trust fund and the need for additional funding. There was a question about have we received any responses from that, and I think, Jason, as far as I know, we've received mostly thank you for your comments type responses and very little reply in terms of substance. I know some other communities also sent out their own letters. We thank you for doing that. Again, we think it's an incredibly important issue, and it seems like there's some dialogue on it even as we speak, but sadly, I don't think we're really expecting much movement until we get down to the wire later this spring. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or have any discussion.
Go ahead, Jason.
Just to kind of augment what Curtis said on the Better Block project, It is an initiative we're pretty excited about, and really what we feel it does is it kind of operationalizes what we've been doing with the Connecting Communities program. So I know most of you are familiar with that program, and that's kind of looking at the integration of land use decisions and transportation, but that's more from a kind of a planning perspective. And what we like about the Better Block is it's kind of a real life demonstration of what you can do if you make temporary changes to a street and to the streetscape along it. So one reason we really wanted to be involved is because we feel like it's very applicable really throughout the region. That granted, a lot of times these take place in older cities where there are areas that have, you know, could use a little bit of TLC and be fixed up a little bit, but we really do think it's a concept that's applicable, I think, in every community in the region to do at one location or another. And I know some of you have already approached us about areas where you might want to do a so-called road diet, where you kind of change how it's striped, and there have been a lot of efforts throughout the region, obviously, to fix up, you know, older shopping centers like at Stowe Kent or Portage Crossing, the former State Road shopping center. So I think it point that out to say, if you can think of areas in your community where you're interested in piloting that type of approach, we're hoping to kind of learn a lot through doing this and maybe either be able to directly help or point you in the right direction, because it is something that's kind of going on in cities and regions throughout the country, and I think with a lot of success, because if you temporarily change something that's a lot cheaper, you can kind of test how it works before you go out and put hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars into it.
Yes, I had the opportunity to go to that meeting, and that guy from Texas who spoke was just a phenomenal speaker. If you have not seen him, there's a YouTube video out with him, and Curtis, maybe you can get that out to everyone, just that link to that YouTube, to see what this guy did on some of these streets that convert them. Just in one day, they took a whole street, and they just brought in plants, temporary stuff, and it was just phenomenal what they did, and it was fun to see. You got to watch this YouTube video.
We'll send it out.
Yeah. Thank you. Anything? Item number 3C, attachment 3C. Victor?
Thank you. Fiscal year 2014 ended back in June. Our last meeting was May, so it's the first time you're seeing the final number in that fiscal year. You'll see that we had about $21.5 billion worth of projects going that year, and we had a carryover balance of a little bit over $7 million. Carryover balance would have been more like $13 million, but we were able to trade off about $6 million worth of funds to three other FPOs in Ohio, and we've got most of those funds back already here at the beginning of 2015, and the rest of it will be returned at the beginning of 2016. That $7 million, though, that most of that is CMAQ funds, and it exceeds the thresholds that are gotten set. They allow us to carry it over into the next fiscal year. What we had to do was ask for a waiver so that they don't take those funds back. And basically, our reasoning was that we're saving up for future year projects, which is acceptable. A couple other things to mention, just an update on our ECR effort that we started earlier this year. If you recall back in our meeting in May, just before that meeting, we were told by OMAD that they're going to resume collecting PCR data about a year after they told us that they were going to stop. So we have kind of already started our own process here, doing a region-wide collective PCR data collection system. And some accounting was heading that up, and within the past month or so, they sent out a letter to see if there was still interest from people in our community to see if they wanted to still join that effort. And at this point, I think there was just a little less than a handful of people who responded that they did want to still be a part of that. So we'll take this information back to our TACTIP subcommittee at their next meeting and see what involvement AMAPs will have going forward. And then the last thing I wanted to mention, we'll be starting the process of updating our TIP. This next TIP will cover the years 2016 through 2019. In December, at our next meeting, what you'll likely see is the first draft list of the projects that will be in that TIP. We just ask if you could make sure that projects that you have federal funds are listed in there and they're in the right year and the balance and all that. So we'll be working on that throughout the winter, and then early next spring we'll get the new CIP approved. And that's all I have on the topic.
Any questions? All right. Moving on to item number four, old business. Is none listed here? Does anyone have any old business? Moving on to item number five, new business, attachment 5A, 2011-2013 traffic crash technical. Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 5A in your handout is 2011-2013 traffic crash memo. I'm going to talk about the high crash sections and intersections. We're going to touch on ODOT's safety program. And then new to the memo this year is a section that we devoted to bicycle and pedestrian safety. The big difference between the high crash sections and intersections and then the bicycle and pedestrian safety section is one is location oriented and bicycle and pedestrian safety section is more trend oriented. A couple changes that I'd like to mention that kind of affect the number of crashes. First of all, beginning in 2013, police agencies do not have to report crashes that have no injury and they feel have property damage less than $1,000. And AMETS recently added Milton Township and the city of Richmond in Wayne County. And to this report, that additional area added 441 crashes. The good news is crashes are still stable. Sometimes when you just look back 1 year, you don't see a lot of difference. In 2013, they did inch up just a little bit, but what I wanted to bring to your attention was when you look back 1 year, sometimes you don't see a lot of difference. But if you go back and look, say go back 10 or 11 years to 2002, we're actually having about 25% less crashes now than we did then. So I think that's a result of everyone's efforts, and that is definitely good news. We determine, first we have to determine what a high crash section or intersection is. For a high crash section, it's 10 crashes per mile per year, and a crash rate of 1. For intersections, it's 10 or more crashes over the 3-year period and a crash rate of 1. Then once we sort out the high crash locations, we have to rank them. We rank them according to a composite score. A composite score takes into account number of crashes, the crash rate, and the severity index. And this is a more balanced way of ranking the locations. There were 124 highway sections that made the cut this year, and that is table 1 in your handout. Those are listed according to composite score. The top 5 are about this. The 4 out of the top 5 locations are the same as last year. The additional highway section in the top 5 is Water Street in Kent. And when I looked at that a little closer, there's not a high number of crashes there, but it's a short segment. There's a lot of new activity in that area, and also the new Fairchild Bridge kind of changed traffic patterns in Kent, which kind of played into that. The big thing I want to bring to your attention on these top 5 sections is 2 of the top 5 are already have funds committed or are are planning to have a project to improve the safety. There were 271 intersections. That is table two in your handout. Briefly looking at the top five, these are the same top five intersections as last year. What happens is the order just changes a little bit. And once again, I'd like to bring your attention. What's important here is three of the top five already have funds and or projects committed. Freeways are done by ODOT. We don't analyze freeways in our office. They do it out of the central office in Columbus. They divide the system up into urban and non-urban. They look at segments that are 1/10 mile long, and they only give additional attention to the top 50 on the urban and non-urban list. And there were 8 locations in the AMATS area that fell in these top 50 lists. 4 of those were on the Ohio Turnpike, and the other 4 were on freeways that were in the city of Akron. The ODOT safety program is one of the best in the country. Each year they commit $100 million or more toward safety projects. Applications are due in the central office in April and September. They're due in the district office about 6 months before then, so they can do all the necessary preliminary work. Funding's available for design, right-of-way, and construction, and the local match is usually 10%. It's really a good thing. Moving on to bicycle and pedestrian crashes. A couple things that are unique to these. First of all, bike and pedestrian crashes have a very high percentage of injuries, 80 and 88%. They're more random and spread out. It might be possible to identify corridors, but it's very difficult to identify exact locations because they just kind of, if you look at a map of them, they're just kind of spread out. Many of them involve children, and many times when you start looking at these a little bit deeper, it's a lack of knowledge of rules by everyone involved, the drivers, the pedestrians, or the bike riders. Bicycle crashes inched up a little bit in 2013. The red part of the bar graph is injury, so you can see they have a very high percentage of injuries. One thing about these crashes is they do kind of fluctuate up and down over the years, and unfortunately there were, in a 3-year period, there were two fatalities. Looking at age groups involved in bicycle crashes, the 11 to 20 year old age group is very very heavily involved in these. I think what might be contributing to that is kids under the driving age riding bikes on the road but not being aware of what the highway rules and laws are. It's a very interesting phenomenon. And out of that 11 to 20 year old age group, 12 year olds seem to be most involved. Most bicycle crashes happen at intersections. That's probably because that's where you have the most conflict points. But when you look into this a little bit further, you find that they're happening at crosswalks. For some reason, bikes are getting hit in crosswalks. And all these crashes listed here are just intersection crashes. And the one with the most incidents is the bike crossed in front of a vehicle in a crosswalk. And then the second most common type is the bike ran a red light or a stop sign. And then when you get a little bit further down the list, there's also another crosswalk-related one. This one is where the bike actually hits the vehicle. So I'm not exactly sure why, but a lot of bike crashes are happening at intersections and are happening at crosswalks. This is an example of a police report that I happened to pull out because I wanted to show you. This is a good example of probably the perfect storm. In this example, the bike rider is, first of all, he's riding on the sidewalk, and then he's riding against traffic instead of with traffic. And you have some bushes here, which help block the view of the vehicle and the bike. And then the vehicle, I think, pulled up a little bit too far and just and hit the bicyclist. Then, this is another common thing, the vehicle left the scene without stopping. So I kind of use this as an example because it's kind of the perfect storm police report for a bike crash. Pedestrian crashes are pretty stable. They're down from a couple of years ago. Once again, they tend to fluctuate up and down. Also, a very high percentage of injuries, 88%. Unfortunately, these have resulted in more fatalities. We had 13 pedestrian fatalities in the 3-year study. Once again, the 11 to 20-year-old age group is very heavily involved. This one doesn't drop off quite as fast, though. You have a lot of 21 to 30-year-olds also involved in pedestrian crashes. And my speculation is that could possibly be college students driving that age group up. They happen almost evenly between intersections and non-intersections or mid-block. So in other words, pedestrian crashes pretty much just happen everywhere. But when you look at those a little bit closer, the mid-block crashes, the pedestrian is more at fault. There's more pedestrians at fault with the mid-block crashes. But the intersection crashes, the vehicle driver is more at fault. And then you have, kind of a third category, and that's driveway crashes. And that don't account for a lot, but those are kind of evenly split. So concluding my presentation, the good news is total crashes, injuries, and fatalities are up slightly in 2013, but still stable and still much better than 10 or 11 years ago. All the locations and the tables are eligible for the ODOT Highway Safety Program funding. And we'll have these locations sorted by community on our website, so you don't have to sift through all these locations to find the locations in your community. AMATS does highly recommend that when you plan projects and just in your general planning that you include pedestrians and bicycles. AMATS has a website in addition to their regular website called Switching Gears. It offers a lot of safety information about bicycling. And something we want to offer to you is if you have a location that you'd like to know more about, we'd be glad to do a crash diagram, maybe take a closer look at what's happening, and maybe come up with a few countermeasures. And if nothing else, that would maybe help you decide if you want to pursue this with ODOT funding. So be sure to give our office a call if you have any locations you'd like more information about. And also if you have any questions about the memo in general. So that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions I can answer? Yes.
I think your observation with respect to those two bar graphs that divided up the pedestrian and bicycle incidents by age group, your observation that big tall stack of I think it was 11 to 20 year olds.
11 to 20.
You had pointed out that there was a large group there that hadn't got a driver's license, didn't have any driver's training, and may not have any idea what the rules of the road are supposed to be. Would it be possible, I think it would be useful, I don't know how practical it is, could you cut that bar graph? Could you divide it at age 16 as the under 16s and the over 16s? Because I think for purposes of planning, it would be a lot more useful to divide up that group into the people that haven't had driver's ed yet and people that have driver's ed and see if any of that carries over into the bike and pedestrian safety.
Yeah, actually, back at the office on my computer, I have it broken down by individual ages. I didn't want to show that one because it's kind of big and it's kind of confusing, but I actually have it broken down into by actual individual ages, and you can actually see, like, by each age how many pedestrian or bicycle crashes happen.
So, Dave, why don't you go back and take a cut at 16 and see what that looks like?
Yeah,
and one other thought, I think, on that, when you see that trend, and this is where the bike and pedestrian data is not as good. We have better data on driving habits and traffic counts and so forth. But also keep in mind people between 11 and 20, a large percentage, even with driver's licenses, they don't necessarily own cars, and they're going to travel by bike or on foot a lot more than other age groups simply because that's how they get around. So unless they can get their parents to take them around in the minivan. But I think there'll be times that what we don't know is we don't know what percentage of all pedestrians are 11 to 20 or what percentage of all cyclists. But it would be logical. It's probably higher than a lot of age groups. So if there's more people that age walking or biking, there's probably going to be more people that age getting in crashes.
And particularly from a planning standpoint, you know, you've got with that particular grouping from 11 to 20, you're lumping in middle school students with college students, and there's probably different kinds of planning that would be appropriate for making a place safer if you're clientele or the people you're talking to are in eighth grade rather than coming home from a bar or trying to sneak into a bar, I guess, if they're only 20. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll take that into account. Maybe those ages do need to be broken apart differently. So we'll try some different things and see how it works.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
So you're here to be able to talk.
Thank you. I was curious, under the bar graph of the primary types of bicycle-related crashes and fall, I didn't see a separate category in there, and I imagine it covers several categories for crashes that occur between cyclists and cars when the cyclist is in an unprotected bike lane immediately to the right of the traffic that it's traveling with. I don't know, do we have data on that, or does anybody?
Sometimes on the police report, it might show if there's a bike lane. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes there's a description and then no diagram. I think what we could do, though, we could probably plot the locations. And then I know we have in our GIS a layer of our bike lanes and kind of see how many happened where there were bike lanes, but then it's still sometimes difficult to know if that bike was in the bike lane. I guess you almost have to assume it was. But that would be interesting. You can just keep digging and digging with this data, but that's something we'll also try to take a closer look at.
Dave, I think you did that on the last round of bike crash data, didn't you? What did you find?
I think we did, and I think we found it was a relatively small number, I think 18 or so.
Of a couple hundred?
I think, yeah. I think it was a relatively small number when Seth, I remember Seth, he did that in GIS.
We'll take another look at that, too, because like Dave said, we won't know for sure unless the police report was really specific if the bike was in the bike lane, but it would be valuable just to know whether there was a bike lane at all. I just had One other comment, too, kind of relating to Mr. Mackey's comment. And the staff doesn't really have a recommendation on this at this point, but it might just be something for all of you to consider as we update our funding policy. Our funding policy for projects, as most of you know, has various criteria. We look at things like average daily traffic, or we look at the functional class of the road, or other things to help us make decisions on what to prioritize. Safety is a component of that. I think from where we sit, it's dealt with in a way that is pretty good as far as balancing it against other things like the pavement condition or congestion or things like that. But it's, and I think we've always felt that ODOT has a really great nationally recognized safety program that's quite well funded to kind of round out what we might not fund as much with safety. But it is always the option of this committee working with the staff to next time we have discussion on revising our funding policy, we could tweak those numbers. And so if we collectively feel that safety needs to be looked at a little bit more strongly, or we should be funding more explicitly safety related projects, we would have that option. We could make crash rate or number of crashes basically a higher percentage of the points that you get than we do right now. Again, I think from where we sit, we think we have a pretty good balance on that, but I'm a big believer that any process, no matter how good, can always be improved. So,
any other comments? I'll entertain a motion to accept Attachment 5A.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 6. Resolution 6A, 2014-2012, adopting the revised AMETS funding policy guidelines. Jeff?
Thank you. Recently, the Federal Transit Administration initiated or made changes to the several categories of funding subsequent to the latest federal legislation, which is MAP 21. In order to utilize these categories of funds, it's necessary to revise the funding policy guidelines. The staff is requesting three major changes to the funding policy, which include the addition of a new program in Section 5339 Bus and Bus Facilities Program. This new program provides Metro and CARB an additional $850,000 a year for capital purchases. Also, we would like to make revisions to the Section 5310 Elderly and Disabled Program. This program will now be administered by the MPOs. In the past, ODOT administered this program. Consequently, it's necessary to revise the funding policy to include the project selection process and scoring criteria for new projects. This program will provide approximately $500,000 per year for the transportation of the elderly and disabled in the Amherst area. Metro, CARTA, and the area social service agencies are eligible to apply. And lastly, revisions were made to the Section 5307 Urban Formula Program. This program provides capital funds to public transit agencies. As Medina County Public Transit now serves a portion of the Akron urbanized area in Wasburg, it's necessary to provide them with approximately $300,000 a year. The remaining $7.4 million per year is split between Metro and CARTA. The revised funding policy guidelines are posted on the AMETS website. If approved, the staff will present recommendations for elderly and disabled projects to the policy committee in December. Resolution 2014-12 adopts the revised funding policy guidelines. The TAC and the CIC both recommend approval.
Any questions? Hearing none, entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion on the floor has been seconded. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 6B, Resolution 2014-13, approving the fiscal year 14 year-ending report. Attachment 6B.
This memo discusses the staff budget and expenditures for the fiscal year that just ended on June 30th. The purpose of the attached resolution is to approve the fiscal year 2014 year-end completion report for TransFoodle to ODOT for their review. We do this annually, and then we meet with ODOT in October in order to finalize the fiscal year. Within attachment 6B is a financial summary for all the work elements scheduled during the last fiscal year. In summary, the staff budget was approximately $1.8 million. Nearly $1.7 million was expended, with the remainder available for this year's use through December 31st. A number of significant products and activities were accomplished during the last fiscal year, such as the allocation and management of federal funds for the area, including a round of funding, the traffic counting program, a high crash location report, the development of a statewide CMAC program, and a coordinated plan for the elderly and disabled for the area. All planning work for fiscal year 2014 was completed, and expenditures were within the budgeted amounts. The TAC and the CIC both recommend approval of resolution 2014-13. Are there any questions?
Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item number 6C, approving projects as submitted to the statewide mitigation CMAC plan. And that's attachment 6C.
Just kind of refresh your memory of how this all came about. ODOT gets CMAC funds from Federal Highway. We are not required to pass those funds on down to the FDO, just they always have. The problem started when collectively the FDOs of Ohio had trouble bringing those balances down. So each and every year that these large balances kept carrying over. So instead of taking the funds back, ODOT simply said that instead of the individual FDOs having their own allocation, it would become a statewide program that would still be managed by the MPOs in Ohio. So we've developed a funding policy guidelines to run that program. And back in May, all the individual FDOs started their own processes for accepting applications for those funds. Our applications were due at the end of June. If you look at that table, which is the handout, there's 11 projects there, but there was 10 submitted from our area. That last one is a study that was submitted from ODOT. When the TIP subcommittee looked at that project, didn't really fit the criteria, so they just simply said that it was unscorable, so that's why it has 0 points. But that'll be dealt with in more detail once we get down to the state level. So anyhow, if you add all those projects together, the requests were almost $30 million. And there was 9 different criteria that we used to come up with that total score that's on the far right column. And one thing to point out was that one of the scoring criteria was priority points, and that was simply that we were allowed to give 4 projects additional points above and beyond the points that they got through the normal score. And what the subcommittee basically decided to do is simply give those points to the top 4 projects that scored. So this order did not change any, it's just the top 4 got additional points. What we're going to do now is simply, once this is approved, we'll send this down to the statewide committee. They're actually meeting tomorrow for their first meeting to start looking at these and how they compare with the rest of the state. Make sure there's consistency in the scoring. There'll likely be 1, possibly 2 other meetings in October to finish up that process, and then hopefully by the end of the calendar year, or should be by the end of the calendar year, we'll know which project will be funded. So with that, the Tax TIP subcommittee and the staff recommend approval of this resolution, which is our priority list of projects to send out to the statewide CDOT funding committee for consideration.
Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second. There's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 6D, approving amendment number 15 to the Transportation Improvement Program. David?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Resolution 2014-15 is approving amendment number 15 to our transportation improvement program. This amendment adds three new projects, combines two projects into one, and revises the scope of work, funding, or schedule of eight existing projects. Briefly, the three new projects is Cybering Way is a demolition project in Akron to remove a structure to make way for a new street. Interstate 7677 bridge repairs is a new project in Coventry Township in Akron to replace bridge deck, one of which is a pedestrian bridge. And Interstate 271 slide repair is a project in Northfield Center Township to repair an embankment. The projects that are being combined is are two projects in the city of Hudson, Brandywine Drive and Library Drive bridges are being combined into one project, and then there's eight existing projects that have changes in scope of work, funding, or schedule. And if there's any questions about those, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
And motion on the floor, and second. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item 7, other business. I guess it's that time of year where we have to look at the nominating committee for the next year's AMET board. I know Gene Roberts is the acting, or the vice chair, which I think he'll be a great chair next year, but I would like a couple members from this committee to sit with me on a nominating committee so we can come back to AMETS at our next meeting for recommendations to everyone as a whole.
I'll volunteer.
I'll volunteer also. Bobby, chair, and Lou. Thank you. We'll meet right after this and talk about it. Item number 8, adjournment. Anything else come before the board?
One thing, Mr. Chairman. You may have gotten notice, may not, ODOT Central Office, Andrea Stevenson, who was here a few months ago, is hosting on Thursday, November 13th, the Northeast Ohio LPA Day. Myself and my counterparts in District 3, 11, 12 are all invited. It's going to be at NeoMed. Starts from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and safety program, other things will all be on there. So you're all invited to come down. It's a good way to learn about our processes going forward.
I appreciate that. Don't forget the October 17th is coming up here for a big meeting. I think it's going to be pretty good agenda, and looking forward to that. And our next meeting will be December 18th and, at this location. With that, it is now 2:21, and we are adjourned.